Welcome to the Trust Your Gut podcast with Erica Smith and Nicole Carter. In this show, we'll be sharing with you everything we've learned about gut health and everything that you can do to make it better. We'll be sharing our stories from personal experiences, client success stories, as well as the new and relevant science to gut health. We hope you enjoy the show. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to the Trust Your Gut podcast. We are so excited to be back again with another super awesome guest. You guys are going to be blown away by this stuff today. So I'm going to hand it over to Erica, and she is going to introduce Dr. Eisenman and tell us all the wonderful things about her.
Awesome. Hi, guys. Welcome. Welcome back. We're happy to announce that we have this other guest on our show today. Her name is Dr. Michelle Eisenman, and she works with individuals who have a brain injury and helps improve the quality of their life by teaching them how to live a lifestyle that boosts recovery. Now, she is also my cousin's daughter, and I could not be more proud of all of her success. So, Michelle, welcome, and thank you so much for coming onto our podcast. I am excited to hear about your journey and how you directly impact the journey of those who come to you.
Thank you. That's so sweet. Yeah, I'm excited. It's really fun to be able to do this with family, too, so that's really cool. Thanks for having
me. Very nice. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sure we'll have you back on again because you are a force to reckon with. I see it all over social media. You are innovative with your techniques on treating, and you are so young. So you have many years to guide many, many people into a healthy lifestyle. So I'm going to start by asking, how in the world did you end up here? What has been your journey, your motivations, your drivers?
So growing up, I knew I wanted to be in healthcare. And, you know, you're aware of, you know, my mom and some of the things that have been going on with her health-wise. So my mom's a cancer survivor. She also has a Charcot-Marie tooth, which is a polyneuropathy. And I just kind of grew up as an only child, seeing her have a lot of health issues. Growing up, I had a lot of health issues because I had a lot of exposure to mold as well. And just it's been a common theme in my family to have like just healthcare issues, period. So that's kind of how I ended up here. I knew I wanted to do something in regards to neurology because of my mom's Charcot-Marie tooth. I have two other aunts that actually have the same condition. And I knew that much. As I went to school and I started shadowing a neurologist and a physiatrist, you know, they kind of approached me and talked me a lot of different things and really, really encouraged me to be very open-minded to a lot of different careers and different positions in regards to neurology. And so because of that, I started trying to find out more and more ways to help assist people in neuroscience, and I found chiropractic. And so I decided to be a chiropractor because as a tool for rehabilitation, I really liked the adjustment and I really liked the philosophy. So I do use the adjustment for my patients, especially when we're trying to stimulate specific areas. You know, balance centers, the vestibular system, cerebellar as well. And so that's how I ended up doing that. But at the contrary of a lot of, I guess maybe it's changing now because people are starting to really understand it a lot more. But when I first started school back in, I think 2016 or something like that, so it hasn't been that long. I specifically went to chiropractic to be able to help people with neurology or functional neurology, as opposed to how some individuals actually go to chiropractic school and then find out about the neuroscience aspects of things.
Got it. So your motivation was that neurological aspect of it all and how or what practice would get you to the better results addressing those issues, which is great. Definitely a different motivation that, like you said, most people get into it. I find it interesting that you had regular practitioner doctors advising you to look into other practices, not so much the Western medicine, or I mean, chiropractic practice have been around for a very long time, but they're not the common one. And yeah. I know that you and I, coming from, you know, Puerto Rican backgrounds, I don't know that chiropractic practices were, I had no idea they existed when I was living in Puerto Rico. I don't know about you. And I still live amongst most family members that don't even use chiropractics and don't believe in the practice or what it can achieve at all.
Yeah, I think that's just really a lack of knowledge on, you know, what systems are actually involved in postural tone. For example, a lot of people have a misconception of what exactly is muscle tone and what sets muscle tone, which is actually the brain, and how those all systems really are affected and how they work together. And so I find that most people that are like that is because they just, you know, haven't been, you know, taught how some of these things work. But those doctors were actually originally from Puerto Rico. And
interesting,
just working here in Texas. And, you know, I think that their sincerity kind of just came from a way, you know, they're excellent doctors, very, very excellent doctors. But, you know, I was advised, like, hey, if I could choose my career again, I would. So I would really advise you to look, you know, elsewhere, because even though they have done amazing things for so many of their patients, they knew that there was much more that could be offered. Not to say that anything that other practitioners choose to do is wrong. It's just, as a practitioner, you need to really evaluate what are the tools that you want to have in your toolbox. And when I had to answer that question for me, it wasn't medication. It was more of the adjustment, the tool that I really wanted to have and focus on rehab sides.
Yeah. So Nicole and I talk about this all the time, how, you know, it's not that we are saying that Western medicine doesn't have a place in the world for care, but we view it as more of an acute sort of care. It's not, there's not much preventative or restorative care in that model of medicine. So we definitely think that once you get to the doctor's office and you're needing medication, you're sort of in an acute state and it doesn't really solve the issue. It's just kind of treating the symptom there. So thinking of all of that and how it is all systematic, how does your gut microbiome, because you know, our podcast is called Trust Your Gut. We try to look into all of this stuff. So how does the gut microbiome affect those brain injuries that you're trying to heal?
So it's a multimodal effect, really, because I think it's great that there's a lot of research coming out about the gut microbiome. I think it's something to really keep in mind for, because, you know, as a society and different practitioners, we always start thinking like, oh, it must be SIBO. Oh, it must be celiac. So, you know, there are a lot of different systems that come into play, but specifically the gut microbiome and traumatic brain injury, what happens is that after a traumatic brain injury, your gut can actually become more permeable. And so different zonulin channels can actually not work as well as they were working once. Uh-huh. And it gives, you know, there's a difference potentially in balance of pH, like hydrochloric acid that is typically produced in the stomach can be reduced after a traumatic brain injury, leading to a more alkaline state. You know, people that tend to have difficulties digesting protein, for example, can then have putrefaction of the different proteins in their stomach that can lead to bad bacteria. And so it really is this multimodal effect on, you know, permeability of the gut, difficulties with acid production, being able to break down foods and really enhance gut motility to be able to get rid of some things as well. So there's definitely a big change in gut microbiome after a traumatic brain injury. Just as a caveat, some people can get a traumatic brain injury and heal back, and it's as if nothing's ever happened to them. And that's great. There is actually some genetic type of component on how well you heal from a brain injury. So if someone can just clock their head a little bit and then have really bad symptoms, lasting symptoms, and someone can just hit their head severely and recover very well. It also has to do at the state of which your, you know, health was at the time that you received the incident. And if you're a female, then you also have to keep into account what kind of menstrual state you were in your cycle.
Interesting. Yeah. All of those things are seem to be completely important. And a lot of times I think when somebody has a concussion or a brain injury, none of those things are really addressed in the typical medical model. So, you know, you just the simple example you gave, like your HCl or hydrochloric acid is going to be off balance, and all of a sudden you start experiencing some heartburn and you go to your doctor and now you get your proton pump inhibitors and you end up in a worse situation, right? So addressing and looking at multiple options on how to treat all that is what we always say to look into, because there could be, you know, an underlying on there. You could have a brain injury you're not even aware of. So absolutely great information there. Do you find that your patients in particular are aware of having a microbiome and what the link between healing that or healing their injury and the microbiome is?
I feel like there's, I feel like you guys would probably relate to this too, but in the TBI community, there's one or two people. There's your people that are just doing anything and every single little thing that they can do for their health. And it's, and they're just going like hardcore, like they have just done it all. And it just becomes a very consuming thing for them because they just want answers and they're very proactive. And then you have, you know, the other side of the spectrum, that it's people that are just like currently like dipping their toes into it. They don't really understand it. They just know that they're kind of stumbling through the journey and they just, you know, have been told this or that, or have been said, oh, don't worry about it, it'll fix itself. So I go, okay. So there's really no happy medium. I really always find that it's one or the other. Like they either know, like ridiculously educated on everything because they've seen so many doctors, because they've done so many things, because they've researched on their own, or they're just, you know, starting off in a journey or just kind of in a limbo stage.
I think that I see this the most with, you know, during the consultations with my clients. It's like, you get those ones that are like, I kind of heard and I kind of saw, but I don't really know. And so I was thinking about trying, and it's very critical as to how much information you give them, right? Because you don't want to overwhelm them. But then you do have the other ones where, you know, you're hearing all of the things they're doing, and it's like, a lot of times it's consistency with it and having somebody to help you track those things and having somebody help you define what it is of those things you're trying that are really giving you positive results, as opposed to, you know, having you run in circles and try 20 different things in 1 month. Do you find that as well, that your position as, you know, in your industry is to kind of sort of help guide?
Oh yeah, there's a huge aspect to guidance. And I do currently work in a clinic, clinical setting with patients face-to-face, but I also have my coaching business, which I dedicated more to guidance. I think there's an aspect of guidance that's extremely needed in the population because, you know, I do believe that they both need to have a place in the world. Like some people just absolutely need to be in a clinical setting and get hands-on work because the brain is just works in a way that it has adapted to survival, and you're not going to be able to restore specific neural pathways unless someone else is helping you see that. And then it becomes this one thing. I always tell people, it's almost like you're looking at two different pictures and they say, spot the difference. And you can't really see it, then someone points it out and you're like, oh, I can't unsee it. That's kind of like the feeling that some people get. But even those people in a clinical setting, they'll still need to learn how to adapt at home and really understand how to apply lifestyle, because we all used to know that we had a brain. However, it just was not something that was of consciousness to us. Like people that have more specific gut problems, even though they kind of come hand in hand, because brain, gut brain is a whole thing in between itself. But then you realize, oh, I really have a gut, so I have to actually do something about that. You become very consumed about it and very aware of treating that stuff. But yeah, I do find that guidance is something that's extremely necessary until you really have tools in your toolbox that you can say, okay, and now I can kind of take this and continue moving forward.
Exactly. So going along that, have you found particular foods that are detrimental to your patients' recoveries, or and how about any foods that are key to their recovery and healing?
Yeah, so just keeping in mind, this is very specific to TBI, but I guess, you know, people are going to probably be like, oh, here it goes again. But number one, and I have to say this, the number one food item that I really, really highly recommend people with a traumatic brain injury to stay off or lay off of from, even if you don't have an intolerance, even if you don't have the actual disease, it would be gluten. And the reason for that is because you know, gluten does specifically attack neural tissue. It is specific to neural tissue at most given times, especially cerebellar tissue. Some people can actually have something called gluten ataxia and not even know it. And the different ways that gluten can affect different people is just so vast. I've seen people actually have difficulties with speech production. I've had people have difficulties with dysglycemia. I've had the gluten ataxia. And of course, you could also have antibodies to your thyroid. So one of the things that I really encourage people is, it's such an easy thing to do to just kind of remove it, maybe not forever, but for a small period of time. And then really going ahead and checking out, if you really want validation, a blood test that can really tell you about it. And just to let people know, there's so many different blood tests that you can do, different antibodies that you can have. And so if you have a practitioner that's testing, you know, maybe just three, and it comes out clear, there's still a possibility that you need to continue looking. So for those people, if you tend to have a lot of cerebellar type issues, especially issues with balance, issues with coordination, issues with speech production, oculomotor movement tracking issues that are just bad all across the board, specifically more towards saccades, which is a fancy word for jump from target to target, I'd really look at gluten as a major contributor. Second to that would be casein, dairy, just because they're so molecularly similar to each other. And then third after that would be albumin for eggs, although I do find that to be less with TBI than specifically gluten and dairy, just from the people that I've helped with. And, you know, it's not the most terrible thing ever, because we do want healthy cholesterol levels. So a lot of people tend to avoid cholesterol, but it's actually needed for hormone production. So those would be the top three that I would say, okay, yeah. And so for foods that I think should be included, and keeping in mind, this is specific to traumatic brain injury, fats are absolutely necessary. You really do not want to ride, you already probably ride the way of dysglycemia, because your brain is just sucking in energy from the very little amount that it actually has, and it signals you to get more fuel. And so if you're constantly carb loading, we always say that people are addicted to sugar in three different ways. You either drink it in alcohol, you eat it in sweets, or you eat it in carbs. And so that's something that's really, really important to keep in mind. But fats, ketogenic diets after a traumatic brain injury is extremely good. Bone broth and making sure that you drink a lot of those bone broth minerals is very good. And just making sure that overall you have a very good blood sugar balance. If you tend to have issues with fat production, that probably is going to be a gallbladder issue. Maybe you have a gallbladder sludge going on. And so there's other things that you can do for that, like taking, I think, licorice root, dandelion, some of the things that can actually help, you know, smooth out that. If you really absolutely need to, then trying out some bile salts, but even just supplementing with hydrochloric acid to help with bile production as well would be helpful. But fats would be number one, I think, the best that I've seen. And it's a significant difference that I see in patients too.
Very good. So I think I can agree with most of those things. You know, I am a proponent of no lectins. Gluten falls under that as part of those lectins. They're neurotoxin. They were made that way because they want to slow down the animal from eating the plant. That's what they were meant to do. We're just not aware of that anymore. We kind of ignore it when the signal gets sent. We just take other drugs to pacify the neurotoxins that we're ingesting. And I always say, if you stop and think that you are more than just you, that you are whatever is within you, then you start realizing that you have to eat and treat the bacteria and the viruses that are actually providing the food for us or the information within the food. So I agree with that as well. I think that gluten should not be in the diet. And in terms of dairy, I do A2 milk, which has a different protein on the outside. And then goat is what I typically do with my clients, any goat dairy if they're going to do, because they respond a little bit differently than the regular cow's milk. And then fats, I generally do go with, you know, olive oil, avocado, you know, olives, all those things fall under what you're thinking as good fats.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Right. Like, we definitely don't want to, that's why I loosely translate unless I'm actually working with a client or a patient. It's like ketogenic diets. It's not really what you find on Pinterest.
Yep.
So just make sure that you're actually getting like your green leafy vegetables, that you're eating good, you know, grass finished, not even grass fed, but grass finished beef and different meat products. And if you're getting fats, avocado, MCT oils, like the different boiling points for the different oils is very important, so you don't have any oxidative stress. But yeah, all of that is good stuff. And of course, you know, different berries and stuff like that are very good for blood-brain barrier permeability too.
Yeah. And I think that's the importance of working with somebody, whether it's your practitioner or health coach or, you know, anybody that's going to help you differentiate between what is a good fat, what is a bad fat, what is a good green, a bad green, and all that stuff, because it's hard to keep track of. And even though the information is all out there, sometimes, you know, when you're in a pinch or you want to really get your healing kind of upstarted, jumpstarted and going, it's really nice to have somebody with the information all at your fingertips, literally, for what you are going through at that point. So what does a typical day look like for you? Why don't you tell our listeners what foods or activities or even practices that you strive to accomplish each day?
Okay. So this is like me personally, not like me at work.
Sure.
Okay. Because that varies, but actually some of the practices that I teach people, I definitely apply for myself too. So if I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is I try not to look at my phone. I try to not really have blue light exposure in the morning. If I have any clients that are going to listen to this, they're going to be like, oh yes, the dreaded hour that she wants me to not look at my phone. I specifically eat breakfast. I have to eat a breakfast. So I usually have pre-made breakfasts that I've created already. And I just sit down, eat a quick breakfast. I either read my Bible, do something calming. I mean, no, I don't always have that much time, but do something that's calming. Drive to work. And during work, I just work with different patients and clients. I actually have this, funny enough, that you mentioned that, because I have this necklace. It's called a Camuso. And so different practices that I use for myself is I tend to have or have had issues with like POTS, like autonomic nervous system things. And so this helps with my breath. And so I'll be working with patients and I will literally take a deep inhale and exhale through the necklace, which is really helped. So those are little things. I'll use essential oils every now and then to help me, you know, activate my brain and think about happy thoughts and, you know, pair nice things with happy thoughts. Definitely eat a lunch. I try not to have too many carbohydrates during lunchtime because I don't want to, you know, not that I always get sleepy, because then that would also be, you know, an issue going on. But I just try to have a more lighter lunch. That's good. And then I kind of come back home. I try to exercise, whatever that may be. My exercise is different than the average person. I feel like people go to the gym to hypertrophy muscles, whereas my exercise is more geared towards my brain. So I really do a lot of extensor tone exercises. I mean, some simple squats, different, you know, running for specific heart rate targets that I'm trying to get to. And then I just kind of come back and I try to unplug and just spend quality time. When I'm not spending quality time with family or my husband or something like that, I am just ever consumed learning more and more and more. We're talking to clients. So at night, depending on if I feel like I'm going to have any light sensitivity, because, you know, we're not perfect, right? I have some blue light blockers that are more about 90% filtration instead of that 30% that I try to wear during the day in a computer. About 2 hours before bed to try to get my brain ready for it. I may do a brain tap session, do my skincare routine, I guess.
So it seems like you're going to get a good breakfast. You're going to do no snacks during the day. You're going to keep a light lunch and do an early dinner, control your blue light, and definitely try and get some exercise in there. And it looks like maybe we need to do a video of those special exercises so you can just start sharing them.
So, the snack thing, I only really do when because when you have a TBI, like, you really have to make sure that you can conserve energy. And sometimes working with people, actually having conversations, like moving about, like, it just drains you out of energy. And like, life sometimes just does not give you as much as you can handle. So if I do have a snack, usually something like peanut butter, like not almond butter or something like that, like some kind of fat that I can juice up real quick. And it's the difference is astronomical. I just go, whoop.
Nice.
Like back into, so I really highly encourage that. I had a client not too long ago actually talk to me about how by the end of the day, they just are scattered. They can't even like get two sentences out. I just recommended that to her and she's doing a lot better. And she's like, yeah, I cannot last like the whole day.
Excellent. For our listeners, I just want to say that the reason why Nicole hasn't been in and out of the conversation is because she's having some construction, but I am going to let her in just a second to ask one final question for Michelle. But before I do that, I was going to ask you, Michelle, I always like to ask our guests, what makes you laugh uncontrollably?
What makes me laugh uncontrollably?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I guess
this is supposed to be the easy question.
I'm a very giggly person. I am such a giggly person, especially like in the clinic. Like, we're always laughing. We're always having fun. Cause like, who wants to remap their brain in a sad state? I don't think anyone does. But I think though, the thing that makes me laugh uncontrollably is, this is just a funny detail. My dog farts to get people's attention. And I'm for anyone listening that's like, no, your dog has a digestion. No, I'm telling you, I've consulted with veterinarians. Like, she literally, if you're not paying attention to her, that's the only time she'll fart, because everyone turns around and looks at her and starts laughing. And so, yeah, my dog is training me to pay attention to her while she just lets out a fart, and they don't stink. They don't, it's just a weird, really strange thing.
That's hilarious. So Nicole, what question do you have for Michelle?
Yeah, thank you. The fart jokes are the best. That was really good. Thank you for letting me be on silent mode while I've got the construction going. But I did want to ask, my question that I like to ask every guest is, what you've said some amazing things today. I think there's already a ton of take-home points. But if you had to sum things up for people, and give them, let's say, 3 or 4 tips or action items that they can start right away, what would those be?
Food is either inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. So just make sure you start cutting down on processed foods, especially if you have a traumatic brain injury. Make sure that you pay attention to your blood sugar. And then the last one would be to understand that gut permeability, as much as brain permeability, is very dynamic. So if you do have an issue with it, don't just get discouraged by it. Just really trace back and say, okay, what could I have done that has made these, you know, barriers more permeable, and really start jotting down a system so that you know what works and what doesn't.
Amazing. I think those are great. Yeah. I don't think we talk enough about the brain biome, which has been noted now, and there's plenty of studies for that. And there is a brain barrier permeability, gut barrier permeability, lung barrier permeability. I mean, everywhere you have a barrier, there is its own biome and its own issues, and we have to address it differently. So
everything's leaking.
Everything's leaking because we keep, you know, putting bombs in there. What a great conversation, Michelle. Thank you again for coming on the podcast. We are so delighted that more and more people are hearing about how to overcome their health obstacles, and having doctors such as yourself on the show is a fantastic way to get the word out. Please let our listeners know where they can find you.
Oh yeah. So if someone wants to find me, I had chosen this handle as a joke and now it's stuck with me because I can't. But you can find me on Instagram, and the Instagram page is The Brainfluencer. So it's not The Brain Influencer, but make it one whole word, The Brainfluencer. And yeah, on there you can see I'm really active on Instagram. It's just one of my favorite platforms. I've been asked to go ahead and go to other platforms. I don't know that I can handle or have the bandwidth for all of that, but DMing me through there, or commenting on some stuff is the best way to get a hold of me.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Michelle. Thanks to all of our listeners for sticking around and listening to this. And I cannot wait to put even more information out there for you guys. And we will definitely have Michelle back.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.